Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And Mel has Karen with the other names. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Actually, I have Karen Plus, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
It's so great to have you on the show. I've been following you on Facebook in a good way. And you do so many things.
Yeah.
So if you were to be introduced doing one thing, what would that be?
Oh, boy. I really, really, really always wanted to write books. So I think that's the number one thing. The ventriloquist thing happened sort of by accident.
Okay. And but you've also written humor for adults?
I have. So I wrote, my first humor book was Remote Controls Are Better Than Women Because.
Okay.
And I wrote, it's because I had this 45-hour commute to and from work on, as New Jersey people would know, on Route 287, which is...
A 45-hour commute?
No, 45 minutes.
No, I like the idea of the 45-hour commute.
So I used to, when you're sitting in traffic for 45 minutes, and that was the quick day. If it was raining, it was like an hour. If it was snowing, sometimes it was 3.5 hours. So I had a lot of time in my car. So I used to just, I'll show you. I used to write on sticky notes. I wrote this whole book on sticky notes to and from work.
So doesn't it bother the police? Like, everybody's driving the car and, like, you are writing your sticky notes instead of driving?
They don't even notice because the traffic's so bad. So I write them on sticky notes and I fling them around my car.
Yeah, the traffic is bad because of people like you instead of driving.
That could be. That
you're
could
writing
be
a bloody
well
book.
That's true. I mean, how many? I actually had, let's see. So in this book, the format is one cartoon on a page and then three more quotes. So I had, and this is a how many page book? Let's see how many quotes I had to send. It's 75 pages times about three quotes. So that's a lot. And so I had it. So he said to me, well, I actually handed in the manuscript and I got a call. Back then you used to get phone calls. And he said, I see that you only have 100 quotes. We need, you know, whatever 75 is times three, I'm not very good at math. He said, do you have those? And I said, sure. And so the next day to and from work, I had to write 200 more, basically.
You didn't have to go to work. You just get stuck on Route 28 the whole day and just write. You
know? It's 287. But
I'm shortening everything today, Karen. Otherwise,
you're shortening everything.
No, right?
So that, you know, so, that was actually a really big hit. I was on the Ricky Lake show for that book back in the 19...
Go, Ricky.
Ricky Lake show. Back in 1991, I think, or something like that. And then, no, 1993, I think. And then this book came out because my friends were mad at me. So now Telephones Are Better Than Women Because came out. Because this was Remote Controls Are Better Than Men Because... these remote controls are better than women because telephones are better than men because.
Okay, so we're getting our genders confused. that's very interesting. That hasn't happened yet in the show. Why don't you start at the beginning?
Okay. So I know you always make people do that. So in the beginning, and
I'm not making you.
I lived in Brooklyn, and you always want to know what happened to people when they were five. growing up in Brooklyn was the best thing in the world. A lot of people grew up in Brooklyn. A lot of humorists grew up in Brooklyn. A lot of singers and songwriters. A lot of famous people. I think Jerry Seinfeld. And anyway, I was in good company. But in Brooklyn, when you used to go to school, you used to walk to school. I don't think we had lunch in kindergarten. You had to walk home and then eat lunch at home, and then you stayed there. And so I always thought, when I was five, I was four when I went to kindergarten because I passed some sort of test. But anyway, so we would walk to school and we would come home for lunch. And then when I went to first grade, I didn't realize that when I went home for lunch, I had to go back to school. And I didn't want to, because in kindergarten, you got to eat lunch and you stayed home. So it was kind of like a really weird thing for me. My mother kept saying, you have to go back. You have to go back to school. And I didn't want to. In Brooklyn, when you came home from school at like whatever it was, 2 o'clock, there was so many people to play with. We used to play with 40 kids from the block, 30 kids from the block. Everybody was very close together. We all lived in apartments, and literally I could look out my window when I had the chicken pox and see my friend right there. She was literally a stone's throw away. So growing up in Brooklyn was great. I don't know if something really bad and traumatic ever happened when I was five. I feel that most of my characters are five, and I'm wondering psychologically why, but something must have happened when I was five, but I can't put my finger on it exactly.
Maybe you're an exception. And maybe I have to change my theory, because maybe
when I was eight, we moved from Brooklyn to New Jersey. And to me, that was when I really started, missing Brooklyn. So eight is probably when I had the most traumatic thing happen to me, not five, I would say.
Okay, but maybe I have to amend and
Maybe
there's people that had such a wonderful time when they were five.
I don't know. I love being five. Five was great.
So either you're trying to remedy some terrible thing that happened.
Maybe.
Or you're trying to live the best year of your life.
I don't know. Five was amazing. Four was amazing. When I moved when I was eight, that was tough. I had to leave all my friends behind. And I actually even wrote, they say write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
you didn't leave your Brooklyn accent behind.
No, I didn't. This one is about a cat moving to a new house. It's called Bandit, and it's from a cat's point of view. So I know that, my sister's a social worker, a licensed clinical social worker. And every time I come up with a book, she's like, I know why you did that one. I'm like, wait, why? Because I don't remember these things. And she's like, well, remember the day that, yada, yada. And I'm like, wow, I totally forgot about that. She's like, well, it's coming out in all your books. So it's interesting.
I have to meet her now and talk about you.
Oh, yeah, you might have to. So she actually knows why I write everything after I write it. So that's kind of funny.
And then you went to high school, I'm assuming.
I did go to high school.
And then you didn't go to the Israeli army.
I did not. I do have cousins that live in Israel that are currently in the Israeli army and have been in the Israeli army. So, and I've been to Israel. I went to the Nahal al Moshav, and my cousins in Ramah HaSharon. So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful country.
You're welcome to come visit anytime, Kate.
Yeah, with COVID, yeah.
do you fly with Maria?
Sometimes.
You have to buy her a ticket?
What was that?
You have to buy her a ticket?
I don't have to buy her a ticket necessarily. She can
buy her
what do they call those pets? The therapeutic pets that travel with you?
Spouses.
She can be like my therapy dog, I guess you can say.
Okay, and so what happened after high school?
So after high school, I wanted to be a writer and I wanted to work with puppets. But my mother said that there were no, how did she put it? There were no career paths at that time, back in the 1980s for being a children's book author or being a ventriloquist. And there really wasn't. So she took me to a place called What Color Is Your Parachute? And I took these tests. They were hours long. And it came up with graphic designer, speech therapist, art therapist, and a couple other therapies, actually, which is really interesting, and also design type jobs. And I went to school for, I wanted to go to school for occupational therapy, but Hartford in Connecticut, it wasn't accredited. So I wound up going to Trenton State. It was called Trenton State College at the time. Now it's called the College of New Jersey. And they had art therapy, which was really fun. I loved art therapy. But then I was also in classes with people that were taking advertising. So everyone was taking sculpture and photography. We were all taking it at the same time. And I realized that that was where I really wanted to be, which was marketing. So I'm not the best artist. I don't illustrate my own books, and there's a reason for that. But I like coming up with slogans and things like that. So I sort of graduated with a graphic design degree after all that. Really? but then I interviewed with Sesame Street. I didn't get the job, but then I realized I really, really wanted to get back into children's book writing and ventriloquism. And they narrowed it down to two people, but I didn't get it. And that's okay. I like being called on the Kermit phone. The Kermit phone called me, which was really cool. And it was just a whole lot of fun. But so I realized when I was working in graphic design that I really on the side wanted to start getting back into writing.
One second, but you didn't tell me when you started throwing your voice.
Oh, actually, so I started doing that when, let's see. So my sister, who is the social worker, when she was born, I was five. So when she
here
was...
Here it comes. Here it comes.
Okay. okay. So that was a traumatic thing. Okay. So when she was three, I started talking for everything for her. Her pillows, her dolls, her food, which is probably why she didn't like eating so much. I talked for her eggs. I talked for her blanket. And for the longest time, she actually really did think that everything spoke to her in her room. And, you know, I thought that was kind of cool because I had that magic, you know, where a little kid could look at me and wonder, how is this blanket talking, or how is this egg talking? Or I'm a self-taught ventriloquist. So.
I mean, well, who's going to teach you?
I don't know. So remember.
And the only way to study ventriloquism is from a dummy.
Yeah. Well, so remember a long time ago when we had those styrofoam things from McDonald's? I don't know. You had McDivitts there for a while in Israel. I don't know if you ever had McDonald's, but.
I don't eat that chazerai, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So back then, hamburgers came in these styrofoam sort of packages. So I used to take them and make them into puppets because the mouths would open and close. It had like a back, you know. So I would just decorate with my mother's jewelry, which probably wasn't a good idea. I would go into my mother's jewelry box. Don't listen, Mom. And I would take her beads. She had these really cool beads on some of her jewelry. And they made really cool puppet eyes. So I would use the puppet eyes and, you know, I would dress them up. And I started making my own puppets until my parents bought me what they called Willy Talk, which was a sort of like a string in the back where the mouth moved and you pulled. But then one day, Willy had a fever. And I put a real thermometer down his throat and he choked on it and he never spoke again. So, and I never got another puppet again.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Until I was older and could buy my own puppet.
I thought you made puppets.
I did, my parents bought me that puppet, but they told me they weren't going to buy me puppets anymore because I ruined Willie Talk.
Did your parents come around eventually to your?
Oh yeah.
Michigas.
Yeah, because now I make money doing that, right? I know that
you sold like a quarter of a million books to Dolly Parton.
Yes, I did.
How did you do that?
So Dolly Parton Foundation, the Dolly Parton Imaginary Library, put on by the Dolly Parton Foundation, buys a certain number of books each year from from authors that are published with Penguin Random House, I think it's called now. So at that time when this book came out, Rooster Can't Cock-a-Doodle-Doo.
I haven't read the book, but the idea is brilliant.
Yeah, thank you. So when that book came out, I think 1 year Dolly Parton, and I didn't know this, which was really, so I'll tell you about that in a second. They bought, I think it was 77,000 1 year and 88,000 another year. Globally, Rooster Can Cock-a-Doodle-Doo sold 250,000 copies, but that's with the Dolly Parton Imagination Library numbers in there, the 88,000 or something like that, and the 77 or whatever the numbers were, big numbers. So what they do is they send books to children from, I think, 0 to 8, they might do. And I think it's each month a child gets a hardcover book. And it used to come in a basket, I believe, because actually there was a picture that somebody sent me in a newspaper that Rooster Can Cock-a-Doodle-Doo. They opened it and inside this beautiful basket was my book. And I was so impressed. And I'm sure they put other things in there besides just one book. But that was the picture that I got. Now, I didn't know that was happening. And then I got this really big check in the mail. And I was like, what's this big check for? And since I was in advertising and printing, I looked on my royalty statement and there were three numbers. There was an ISBN number for the hardcover books, which I totally got. The ISBN number for the paperback books, which I understood, but then was this third really strange number. And I'm like, what's that number? So instead of calling my editor, because I didn't want to look like I didn't know what was going on, I called the, the distribution house where they would, take out the books. And I said, what is this ISBN number for? And they said, oh, that's exclusively for the Dolly Parton Imagination Library copies, because they get a discount,
That's incredible.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
So, yeah. You also have supported another theory of mine without even knowing.
What is it?
Which is that the people that come to writing children's books from different disciplines tend to do better.
Hmm.
And you have all of these things that, that interconnect.
Right.
That's advertising, mm-hmm. And your humor for adults. So I think that what everybody wants to know, I just say that I want to know, but everybody wants to know, is how did you break in?
How did I break in?
Agent selling all these books, or did you
no.
just phone a,
so, or okay,
did you have a
so
job, a dial, There's some story here that's missing somewhere.
You're right. Maybe, there's a story
maybe
missing.
Maria. Maybe Maria.
Okay, so Maria came later, but I'll explain to you the process. So it was a lot easier for me to, I was always writing children's books. However, it was a lot easier for me to get into adult humor. So this book I sold, it came out of a slush pile at Long Street Press. This sold because it was a sequel to the other book.
What's that? What slush pile you sent to find an agent or just to?
So, no. Okay, so a slush, they don't really have slush piles anymore. A slush pile a long time ago, like in the 1980s when I was starting to send things out. I started to send things out in like 1988, I think-ish. And what would happen is it would be snail mail. So you would go to the library or you would go to the bookstore. You would take your book, find books that were similar to yours and send to that publishing company. And I would always open up the book, each book to in the bookstore to see if they thanked their editor, to see if the author thanked their agent. And I would write specifically to that editor, usually, not the agent, because those are hard.
So smart.
So then I would actually submit an actual manuscript in an envelope with a return address, and I would send it away to however many publishing companies I thought would want remote controls are better than women because, or telephones are better than men because, or whatever it is. And because a lot of people don't write for adults, really, there aren't a lot of humor writers out there. It was a lot easier to break in. So then I had four humor books under as a byline, you know, so people knew I wasn't just, you know, I don't know. They knew I already had experience with submitting and working with editors and stuff like that. So then this book came, If Men Had Babies.
Yeah.
And that was also taken out of a slush pile. And so was, which I don't have up here, You Really Know You're in College When, was also taken out of slush pile. So the slush pile is where all the manuscripts go that everybody wants. Everybody wants to publish a children's book or a humor book or whatever. All those manuscripts are in piles and piles and piles, or they used to be, on editors' desks or in another room. They don't really have those anymore because everybody sends things by email. There's very few publishers that still that have an actual slush pile, or
they have virtual slush piles.
Now they have virtual slush piles. That's right. But this actually came out of actual slush piles. So then, one day, I still wanted to write children's books. It's really hard to break in to children's book writing. As you know, it's just the most difficult thing because everybody wants to write a children's book. Every grandmother, every mother, every father, just everybody wants to do it. And there are only so many spots. So I started to go to seminars and conferences. And the one conference that I went to that completely changed my life is the Rutgers University Council on Children's Literature. This year it was virtual. However, when I went, I think it was in 2000, when I went, what they did was and it's not based on first come, first serve. It's based on writing ability. So you send back then, this year it wasn't based on writing ability. Back then you send your manuscript in, and actually it was an actual manuscript that you sent in snail mail. We're going back a long time. I don't think we even had like real computers back then. I think I used to do things on the typewriter back then. So they picked, I think it was 80 people. 80 authors from different genres. So I'm not sure what the breakdown was, but from you were allowed to send in picture books, middle grade, and young adult, and you were also allowed to submit portfolios if you were an illustrator. And then they pick 80 people to come to the conference. And when I found out later what I didn't know then, they also match you up. You either get an editor, an agent, an illustrator. Well, if you're an illustrator, you get an art director, or you get a renowned illustrator. If you're an author, you get either a famous author to help you. You get an editor or an agent. and they match you up one-on-one, and you get 45 minutes to talk to this person. Now, that's how I got in, and I'll tell you. So my first book, Food Freight, which is a pop-up book, yay, that was the first book at that conference that I sold, and Rooster Can't Cockadoodle Do. What happened was, it was kind of a weird sort of psychic thing. So I'll tell you the whole story because you'll probably like it because you're into that kind of stuff. So I'm a little bit psychic, and I can be. People that know me know that I'm a little tiny bit psychic. So I had sent Food Freight, the manuscript, to Dial Books for Young Readers on my own way before the conference. This is way before the conference. I send things out all the time. It's just one of those things. Then my friend said to me, hey, there's a conference going on. You should really go. And I said, well, I guess my best manuscript would be Food Freight. So I sent Food Freight. So I get into the conference based on Food Freight. And the night before the conference, I told my friend, Edna Burkwa. I said, Edna, I'm not going to the conference. She's like, you have to go. She's like, you have to go, because she got picked too. She's like, you have to go with me. We're going together. And I'm like, I can't go, because I just realized, what if one of the 80 people, and I didn't know, one of the 80 editors or agents or whatever has read Food Freight already, and now I'm sending the exact same thing. And she's like, Karen, there's 80 people. What are the chances that you are going to get the editor or the agent that you already sent Food Freight to? And I said, 1 in 80. And she's like, right. She goes, 1 in 80. You have to go. I'm like, all right, I'll go. But if I said to her, if I open that folder and I see that the person that what are the chances, really? The editor that I get is the same editor that I sent Food, I'll just die. And she's, anyway, so she's like, Karen, it's a 1 in 80 chance. Okay. So we go to the conference. I didn't really forget all about it. Of course, I rushed to the registration desk because I want that folder, you know, because you look on your side and it says Karen Rostock or Gruber, then you see who you got. So I rush there, and then there's a breakfast first because the editors are reading the manuscripts while the mentees are eating their breakfast. Because then you have a 45 session one-on-one with the person, and then they talk about your manuscript. Okay, so I'm at breakfast. I have my whatever bagel or whatever, which is not like a New York bagel at all. I open up my folder. I look at Karen Rostoker Gruber, and I look down the side, and there it is. Karen Riskin, the very person I sent Food Freight to 3 months ago. So I said to Edna, Edna, she's like, you know what? She goes, don't worry about it. What if she likes it? Now that I haven't thought about. I didn't think about what if she liked it. I was always thinking about the negative.
Positive psychology, dear.
So I was like, oh, what if she likes it? Then I started freaking out. So I was like, oh, what if she likes it? So anyway, so now the part at the Rutgers conference that really cracks me up is everybody has to walk around with a name tag. And you now have to find, after the keynotes, is it the keynotes? No, there's like an introduction. So after the introduction of, I guess there's 160 people because it's 80 people plus the matchees, and then, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you have to find your person now, and you have to sit there and just look at everybody's chest to see who your person is. And I know this because I thought it was really funny. I was wearing black pants and a white sweater vest and a sweater vest jacket, and Karen Riskin was wearing, she was wearing like the opposite that I was wearing, and I thought that was really funny. And I found her after, like, I don't know, it felt like 20 minutes, and the first thing I was totally so scared now because I didn't know which way Food Freight was gonna go. I was petrified. I sat down with her, and she said, you know, she goes, I already read Food Freight. I was like, I know. And she goes, and I really liked it. And she goes, but I don't do novelty books. So I sent it to my best friend, Kelly Chipinari. I hope that's okay. At Price, Stern, Sloan. And I'm like, I'm thinking, you know, I was trying to put on like a really like, you know, of course it's okay. No, I'm just like, of course.
Yeah. You might have phoned and asked first.
Yeah, inside my body, I was really freaking out.
I'll forgive you this one time.
Yeah, so then I took the only other manuscript that was ready, and that was Rooster Can Cock-a-Doodle-Doo. And she loved it, and she took that too.
Hey, can you read the first page or two of Rooster Cock-a-Doodle-Doo?
Oh, okay.
Because I know the story, but it's so you. It's all about voices, isn't it?
Oh, that's true. Well, you know what? Can I pick a part where I can do my voices?
That's a kind of a rhetorical question, I think.
Okay, hold on. I'll pick the best book, the best page.
Karen, I have zero control over my interviewees, you know.
Okay. I'm gonna pick the best part of my book. Okay, so this is because I can do the voices. So
okay, great.
So here, will you please move your hooves? They're right in our eyes, moo the cows. We would if the swine would stop wiggling their tails in our faces, baa the sheep. Well, tell the featherbrain quartet to quit tickling our snouts, oink the pigs. Oh, who are you calling the featherbrain quartet? Pluck the hens. So this is who has laryngitis.
Yeah.
And can't wake up the farm. So he goes to the hen house, he goes to the pig pen, he goes to the cow barn, and they all go to Farmer Ted's house because they need to wake him up, or no one's going to get milk, no one's going to get sheared, the eggs aren't going to get collected, and the pigs aren't going to get their slop. And that's the whole...
Karen, it's such a brilliant idea, you know, that nothing can work on a farm if the rooster has a sore throat.
Correct.
Do you remember where you got the idea from?
So I do, but it was such a strange day, and it had nothing to do with a rooster. So,
of course not.
What?
Of course not.
Okay. So I went to a lunch at my friend Wendy Peffer's house, and there were all these famous editors there because Wendy has written over 85 nonfiction books for children, and she knew every editor. So really famous editors were there. Marjorie Kyler was there. She has over 80 books. There were a couple other editors there as well, just trying to think. So I was, after that lunch where we all brought our own, we all brought food and shared it. Stephanie Owens Lurie was there. She's really famous. So after that, somebody said, when you go on your way home, think of a real problem that needs to be solved. And that's how you get a good picture book. And I was like, all right. So on the way home, I don't know, always when I'm driving, sorry, always when I'm driving. On the way home, I was thinking, well, what would happen if a rooster had a sore throat and couldn't wake up the farm? And then, or the farmer, actually, and then nothing was getting done. Like, what would happen? And that was it. I just wrote on my little, that's all I wrote on a sticky pad. And then I went home. I wrote a lot of the book that day. Mostly I write at 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I just, actually, though, it wasn't a success story at first. I think I rewrote that book for 5 years. It's a cumulative tale, but I didn't have my humor in it. So my writer's group said, where's your humor, Karen? Put your humor in it. So I went back into my head and we have a lot of Jewish complaining goes on during things that need to be done.
is this your group of the book Meshuggahness?
No, actually, this is way before that. The book Meshuggahness are new.
This is the pre-book Meshuggahness.
What was that?
The pre-book Meshuggahness.
Well, this is my critique group. And this is a critique group that I've been with since 1990 or so. It's just it's the Somerset Writers. And so they said, where's your humor? And I didn't understand what they meant until I started really thinking about what would a cow, how annoyed would a cow be if he couldn't get milked in time? And how annoyed would the hens be and the pigs be if they didn't get their slop? And that's how I started to, and then I started with the puns. So,
but what happens in the end of the story?
What was that?
What happens in the end?
Oh, so at the end of the story, well, a farmer gives Rooster tea and sits him over in a chair by the pond. So, of course, his throat, you know, is feeling a lot better by the end of the day. So he cock-a-doodle-doos, and everybody's like, pipe down, cluck the hens, and we're trying to get some sleep, milk the cows, you know, said the cows, you know, that kind of thing. Save it for the morning, that kind of thing. So they were actually, they were glad that he got his cock-a-doodle-doo back, but they really were trying to sleep. Because apparently by the time he got his cock-a-doodle-doo back, it was bedtime.
Yeah. Because, and maybe that's the reason that I can't find an agent, because if I wrote that story, the farmer would have cooked him in a soup. I think that I need to learn a few things from you about finishing the story. I think that we've woken up Maria.
Oh, hey. Maybe. Let's see. Maria Mill wants to say hi.
Hey, Maria, did we wake you up, dear?
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm really sorry. I'm such a noisy interviewer. I wanted to say noisy. I'm that too.
I can't believe you slept through that whole thing.
I can sleep through anything.
Well, there you go.
Anything?
Yeah.
Like what? What's the worst thing you've slept through?
Lightning.
Wow.
Thunder.
Thunder. That happens after lightning. Yeah.
What else happens over here?
Oh, airplanes?
That doesn't bother you a bit? You get to fly in airplanes?
I did.
You did? What happened?
You didn't get sick or anything.
No, I keep Karen company.
Yeah, but you sit with her on the airplane?
Yeah.
Where'd
you go?
Fire? Like
I went to Texas to see Ellen.
You did?
Yeah.
My friend Ellen?
Ellen.
The writer.
Leventhal.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you have a good time with her?
Yeah, she's fun.
Well, she invited us to the JCC in Houston, Maria and I. Right, Maria?
Did they feed you chicken soup?
No, I ate my plastic donut.
Ah, you eat plastic donuts?
Yeah, they're good.
Is Karen a vegetarian?
No, but she doesn't eat plastic.
No. So what are you? Are you a plasticarian or something?
Yeah, you could say that.
I just did. And it is my show. So what do you eat other than donuts?
Croissants.
Croissants? And they're also plastic?
Yes, they are.
And nothing made out of paper or wood?
No, you can eat paper.
I can eat paper and clay.
So tell me something about Karen that didn't come out in our interview. Tell me some secret. Just between
you want a secret?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't tell them secrets, Maria.
Uh-oh.
You're only five, you know.
He doesn't like flying.
Just like me.
Yeah.
So how do you help make her calm during flying?
I talk to her. I hold her hand.
You hold her hand?
Yeah.
And that relaxes her?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not a ventriloquist, so I can't bring... I have flown with dummies, but... Sorry.
You can bring a therapy dog.
I have something better than a therapy dog.
What do you have?
It's called gin and tonic.
Oh.
He drinks.
Oh. Aunt Maria, no. Just a little bit.
Karen doesn't drink.
She doesn't drink alcohol at all? Does she have any vices that you want to tell us about?
Chocolate.
She's a chocolate-holic?
Yeah, I like chocolate.
What kind of chocolate does she like?
Well,
I used to like, what did I used to like?
Snickers.
But I can't eat them now.
Yeah, she can't.
Why not?
Because they have milk in them.
But you know, tell Karen that there's such a thing as Parvid chocolate.
Yeah, you know what's really good? Those jelly rings.
Hey, dear, I'm speaking to Maria here, you know?
Oh, I'm sorry.
She likes jelly rings.
Jelly rings don't have any chocolate.
Yes, they do.
Really?
covered for Passover.
Ah, so one second. Do you keep kosher?
No.
No, so what do you eat that's made out of plastic that isn't
kosher? Plastic? Well, plastic can be. Is plastic kosher?
Yeah, sure.
Do you ever go to synagogue?
I have.
You sit like in the woman's part or in the dummy's part?
No. Oh.
I sit in the kid's part now.
Oh. And then so you sit in the kid's part with the other kids?
Yeah.
But you told me that you've been 5 years old for the past 15 years.
Yeah.
How do you get away with that?
I look five.
Oh, you look five. But you have like the mind of a 20-year-old.
No, I act five.
Can you tell me some of the things that you do, like that a five-year-old does?
I take naps. I learn how to read. I do art projects.
You do art projects?
Yeah.
What is the most difficult word that you've learned recently?
Things with a B.
This is getting spooky now.
Things with a B. It's hard
for me. No, this is very spooky. What? This is very spooky because I've just written a manuscript about two characters.
Yeah?
Playing a game about who can think of the word with the most B's in it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
That's kind of spooky.
That is.
I don't believe in psychic shit at all, but, you know, it's spooky.
I don't know. Maria.
The loon. That's hard.
The what?
The loon.
Saying the word balloon.
Ah, why is that hard?
It's hard for Karen.
B's and P's are hard.
Ah, B's and P's are hard for Karen. I didn't get it. Oh,
it's
listen.
It's hard for ventriloquists to say B's and P's.
Yeah, I
you now.
I got it. It just took me a long. So, you know, I guess I'm the dummy after all, right?
So what would be the hard word?
Baboon.
That's a lot of bees.
Yeah. I will have to send you the manuscript.
Oh, boy.
Because you're not going to believe it.
Is it filled with bees and peas?
Well, actually, no. So these two
bees.
Kids.
Oh, just bees.
They have an argument. They have not. They play a game. She's a word with the big...
Just bees, he said.
Yeah, just bees.
And one says babble, and the other says babble. And then the other one says hive.
Oh.
And the other kid said, well, hive doesn't have any bees in it. There's a million, just look inside.
Oh, that's weird.
So it is very weird. That is weird. That is weird.
That is strange.
So, Maria, it was great meeting you. Do you have any parting words until the next time we get together?
You mean me?
Yeah.
Who has 40 words? You know what? If you have a dream, keep going because one day.
Okay, Karen, I'm not with you yet. I'm still. With
oh, Maria. You're talking to Maria. She asked you.
Is it me or her? I'm asking her for parting words. I haven't got back to you.
Oh, you want parting words from Maria? Maria, do you have any part? You have any wisdom to give to people?
No.
Like, what do you want to do when you grow up, for example?
No. Don't chew with your mouth open.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm at loss for words. That rarely happens. This was so much fun. Yes, so before we part, you've all these books that you published, very quickly, you've gone back to Jewish books now.
Right.
In one sentence, why is that? You started out publishing for the world hundreds of thousands of books, ecumenical topics, whatever that means. And now you're doing things about Hanukkah and...
Oh, you know, so I should go back because remember we were talking about the slush pile and how I met the editor at that conference?
Yeah, we're running out of time, so you have
Okay. So my other 14 of my books came through the slush pile or came through editors I met at conferences. And actually the only I just recently had, but I don't have her anymore. my agent sold this book, Happy Birthday Trees, and this book, A Crowded Farmhouse Folktale. So I only had an agent for two of my books so far. So out of 16 books, just 14 of them I did myself.
I think you could be an agent if you wanted to be.
That's just not what I want to be.
I know, if you wanted. You're so good at all these things, you know?
Yeah, but it...
Maybe when Maria grows up, she can be.
When Maria grows up and I don't have to think about her anymore? No, but it's really hard to break into the children's book world, but it was a little bit easier to break into the Jewish children's book world because... there aren't as many writers trying to get into this Jewish book world as there are getting into the global Jewish book world. And that's why I went back. So Rooster Can't Cock-A-Doodle-Doo, when I wrote Farmer Kobe's Hanukkah Match, this was supposed to be a sequel to Rooster Can't Cock-A-Doodle-Doo. But my editor had left Dial Books for Young Readers, and the new editor... I guess didn't feel as strongly as another sequel for Rooster Can't Cock-A-Doodle-Doo. So 10 years later, I changed it to Farmer Kobe's Hanukkah Match and sent it to Apples and Honey Press. And then it became a book, but it actually was supposed to be the sequel to Rooster Can't Cock-A-Doodle-Doo. It was sitting in a drawer for 10 years before I took it out.
So if it doesn't work in a church, you just take it to a synagogue.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's just a little bit more accessible, I think, to send to the Jewish market, but the publishers are a lot smaller, but it's nicer sometimes also because you get to talk to the editors in person. I've met my editors from Apples and Honey Press, Dina Neusner and Ann Kofsky. You know, you don't really sometimes get to meet your editors. Especially, well, now with COVID, but I'm just saying.
I was just thinking it's an idea for a book.
What would that be?
You don't get to eat your editors.
That is funny.
Listen, we have to part.
Okay.
And it's such sweet sorrow. It was just terrific having you on the show. Maybe I should do one with Maria and invite you along.
Okay, you could do that.
As a chaperone or something.
Yeah, you if she's what? Not taking a nap.
I'll just invite Maria. You didn't even have to come.
Yeah, I don't even have to come.
This was so incredible.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, we have one more minute if you want to sing a Beatles song.
We'll live in the yellow
one zone. Second. Maybe Maria will sing us a Beatles song.
She's already taking a nap. You missed it.
Wake her. This is important.
It's important. I don't even know if she knows any Beatles songs.
I'm going to ask her. Maria, you're only five for 15 years, but I've never asked a dummy what their favorite song is, Beatles or otherwise. What's your favorite
song? Happy Birthday.
It's Happy Birthday, her favorite song.
Okay, whose birthday is it today?
Nobody's.
You asked her favorite song is Happy Birthday.
It's always somebody's birthday.
That's true. Oh, actually, it's Aaron and Ethan's birthday yesterday.
Yeah.
You can sing a song for them.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Aaron and Ethan. Happy birthday to you.
Wow. Maria, did you know that the Beatles also have a happy birthday song?
I did not know that.
Okay.
I didn't know that Beatles can sing.
About the bug. He's talking about a group called the Beatles.
Oh. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Like, for the first time on my show, I'm kind of speechless. So listen, it was great having
for you. Karen could talk for you and help you.
Yeah, would Karen like to help me? Can you ask her if she wants to help me?
You can go to Dawn, the licensed clinical social worker.
Okay, this is too much for me. Karen and Maria, it was great having you on You've Got Mail. And if you want to come on again in a couple of months, just send me a letter to my slush pile and I'll...
Okay. And I'm sure it will get read in your slush pile.
Thanks a million. It was great.
Bye. Thanks for having us.
If there's anybody in the world who didn't understand why you are such a talented and successful writer... They sure do now.
Aw, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.